I want to continue to talk about the letter to the Hebrews, but it's very important to notice this is the first miracle that Jesus works in Mark's gospel, and it sets the tone. One of the themes of Mark's gospel is Jesus' war against the strong man. And because he's the stronger one, he binds him and plunders his goods. And so this is why in Mark, the very first miracle, very first healing, is an exorcism. But this year, as we go through this part, we're going to be looking at Hebrews. That's all right. One of the problems that this man has, who is this man? Nobody knows. Everybody has an idea, but as Origen says, whoever wrote it, only God knows. And it's one of the great mystic, a great theologian, and a great user of language. This is one of the most intricate pieces in the Bible from a literary point of view. It was not to angels that God subjected the world to come, of which we are speaking. Instead, someone has testified somewhere. Now, that's the very learned way. He knows it's Psalm 8, of course. Someone has said somewhere, see, elegant orator. He knows darn well where it comes from. But he's putting it here because he sees in it, by the grace of the Holy Spirit, that human being who will be completely joined to God and therefore will have everything subject to himself. So what is man that you're mindful of him, or the Son of Man that you care for him? You made him for a little while lower than the angels. You crowned him with glory and honor, subjecting all things under his feet. Now this is where his faith starts. In subjecting all things to him, he left nothing not subject to him. Yet at present, we do not see all things present to him. If this is so true, where is it? He wants us to think. Faith. Yes, the whole world is subject to the risen Christ, but not yet. And so that's his point here, you see. He left nothing subject to him. And yet at present, we do not see all things subject to him. We're in this interim stage between the resurrection and the transformation of the universe. But we do see Jesus crowned with glory and honor because he suffered death, who for a little while was made lower than the angels, that by the grace of God he might taste death for everyone. And so Jesus is the Master, the Lord. But not all things have been made. There will come a time, as Paul says too, in 1 Corinthians. Then it goes on, it was fitting that he, for whom and through whom all things exist, in bringing many children to glory, that's the Father, should make the leader of their salvation perfect through suffering. In that word perfect is, yes, it's moral perfection, resurrected perfection, but also ordination. To be made perfect is a phrase in the book of Leviticus for being ordained. The law says, give him something that he can offer. And so in Hebrew, it means, milei yadayim, fill the hands, give him something to offer. But the Greeks translated that as perfect him. So Jesus is made perfect because he's a priest. And risen from the dead, and the Lord of the universe, you see, he exercises that perfection and that priesthood by interceding for us. Always living, making intercession for us. He's that joined to us. And so He who consecrates and those who are being consecrated all have one origin, the Father. Therefore, he is not ashamed to call them brothers. And then he quotes Psalm 21, the Passion Psalm. But he quotes one of the last lines of it. I will proclaim your name to my brethren. In the midst of the assembly, I will praise you. Now, that prophecy is fulfilled right here every morning. He's in our midst, and he's proclaiming the name of his Father to us in our midst today. And that's, you see, through the gospel, through the Eucharist, every day, this prophecy, which is at the end of Psalm 21, is fulfilled in our hearing. Because he's here in our midst and he proclaims the Father's name. So let's stand and pray.